final message in this series. We've been looking at verses 1 and 2. Paul is pleading with the saved for a very distinctive way of life. The life that he's calling for is a life lived in tune with God. It's an abundant life. It's a flourishing life. It's a victorious life. It is a life lived in peace and joy and glory of the Lord. It's really God's best for us, what we read here. If we do this, we'll enjoy God's best in life. And what we read here, as we've tried to stress, is very extensive. It requires our entire being. It's inclusive of every detail and every circumstance, every aspect of our life. Tonight we want to look at verse 3, which is somewhat of a summary of what is said in verses 1 and 2. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but, on the other hand, to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. In this verse, if you were to paraphrase the verse, Paul is saying, as God's messenger, as your spiritual teacher, and by way of warning, do not have an exaggerated idea of yourself, of your importance. And by way of exhortation, think wisely, and you do this through faith. The message of this verse, again, somewhat of a summary of verses 1 and 2. The message of the verse is God, not self. Our focus is to be on God and not self. In verse 3, there's basically two statements. He says that we're not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. In other words, do not let self become your primary focus. And then on the other hand, he mentions the measure of faith. What does faith focus upon? Faith focuses, of course, upon God. Faith looks away from self. Faith looks to God. So what we have here in these two statements is two different perspectives of life. Self, God. Two entirely different perspectives. Two entirely different results. What we see here are two different objects of life. Self or God. Two different attitudes. Self or God. Two different realms of living. Self or God. So he's speaking here of the importance and the necessity that we be focused upon the right thing. And this is absolutely necessary if we're going to live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. So we want to speak tonight on a life with a proper focus. On three main points. Number one, where we place self in God is absolutely crucial if we're going to live the life of Romans 12, 1 and 2. The reason that most of God's people do not even come close to living life in Romans 12 and 1 and 2, nor do they even have a desire to do so, is because their focus is upon self rather than God. Now, every one of us has been given the gift of physical life, and every one of us is living that life. And every one of us is living that life a certain way. And the way we live that life is largely dependent upon our focal point. The way we live life, the way we approach life, the way we react, has everything to do with what we focus upon. The central focal point determines the nature of our life. It determines the manner of our life. You see, life has to have purpose. There has to be something that is supreme. Most cases, it's self. Certainly, that's true of the world. There has to be something that controls our life. And there is something that controls our life. Something that dominates. There has to be something that gives our life meaning. And again, we see here in our text, there's two choices. Self or God. So what does life mean to us? What does living life mean to us? What is living all about? Well, the answer to those questions depends upon our focal point, our central focal point. Because our focal point defines our motives. Is it self or is it God? Our focal point defines our reasons for doing things. Is it self or is it God? You can even do the right thing for the wrong reason. Is it self or God? It affects our viewpoint. How we view things depends upon our focal point. So our focal point, in reality, shapes our lives. Two verses that we've preached from several times, Galatians 2, verse 20, Philippians 1, 21. Both of those verses, Paul speaks of living life. In those verses, he says, I live. He also says, the life which I now live. That's in Galatians 2:20. Philippians 1:21, he says, for me to live. As you look at those statements and as you look at those two verses, he speaks of two entities. There's I and me, which represent self, and there's Christ. There's self, there's God. And in Galatians 2, verse 20, and in Philippians 1, 21, he does not speak of himself and Christ as separate. Every part of those verses, he speaks as one who is connected to Christ. He does not speak of two separate entities. Though they are two separate entities, he speaks of them as interrelated. Self, Christ. They're connected. They're linked. In Galatians 2, verse 20, he said, I am crucified with Christ. Take out the word crucified and you have I with Christ. I with Christ. Again, you see there is a connection. Also in Galatians 2, verse 20, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. Again, there are two entities, but they're related. He says also, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Again, the two are related. Philippians 1:21, for me to live is Christ, or take out to live for me, Christ. For me, Christ. So it's easy to see in those two verses and also in the epistles of Paul that Paul's focal point was the Lord. That was his focal point. You have to put, and we've preached on this, you have to put self somewhere. You have to put it somewhere. And you have to put Christ somewhere. You have to put self somewhere. You have to put God somewhere in your life. You have to do something with both. They both exist. And something has to do, and something has to be done with both. And what you do with them, where you place them, determines how you live your life. It determines the manner of your living. And our lives declare, whether we realize it or not, our lives declare where we have put self and where we have put the Lord. It's seen in the decisions that we make. It's seen in the choices we make. It's seen, again, in our basic lifestyle. We have put self somewhere. We have put God somewhere. Now, in our text, Paul says that we are not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. Again, do not let self become the primary focus. And then he goes on to mention faith. And with those words, he is saying, focus upon God, focus upon the matters of God. So the life that Paul is pleading for in verses 1 and 2 requires that God and spiritual matters be our focus. We will not enter verses 1 and 2 if God and spiritual matters are not our focus. Secondly, there are two things that prevent the life of Romans 12, 1 and 2. In verse 3 again, Paul twice, he makes basically two statements, and he twice uses the word think. Two times he uses that word think. To think has to do with our view. It has to do with being under a certain impression. To think. It's what we suppose. It's how we reason. It's what we determine. It is a word that speaks of the way that we judge matters. It's a word that speaks of how we regard matters, the matter in which we estimate and regard. Is a word that speaks of how we imagine, how we visualize. To think is to visualize. So Paul makes these two statements, and both statements are with regard to the word think. The one statement is from the negative, as seen in the word not. Not to think of himself more highly than he ought. And the other statement is made from the positive, but to think soberly, according or in accord as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. So from those two statements, we see two matters that will keep you out of Romans 12, 1 and 2. That will prevent you from living the life of Romans 12, 1 and 2. Again, the first statement, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. What is warned against here is pride. Pride will prevent you from living. Romans 12, 1 and 2. You cannot live Romans 12, 1 and 2 in pride. The 1828 Webster's Dictionary defines pride as inordinate self-esteem, an unreasonable conceit of one's own superiority, whether that be in talents, beauty, wealth, accomplishments, rank, or elevation in office. And it's important to remember that in our text, it's a matter of thought. Pride is not always visual. Pride is not always visible. It is a matter of thought. Not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. It's very important how we think of ourselves. It's important that we have an accurate view of ourselves. And the Bible gives us a very accurate view of ourselves. So this pride is described in a number of ways throughout Scripture. 1 Samuel 2, verse 3, Proverbs 8, Isaiah 13. It's described as arrogancy. Arrogancy is simply a feeling or an impression of superiority. In Proverbs 26, 12, seest thou a man wise in his own conceit? So it's described by the word conceit. It goes on to say there's more hope of a fool than of him. Romans 12, verse 16, be not wise in your own conceits. So it's described by the word conceit, which is a high opinion of one's worth. A high opinion of one's worth. In 2 Samuel 22, it's used, the word haughty is used, which is a feeling of preeminence. Philippians 2, verse 3, we read that nothing is to be done through strife or vainglory. Vainglory is a word used to describe pride, which is simply the glory of self. The glory of self. So pride is the mindset of self. It is the preoccupation with self. There are people in the world, and we all know them, who it doesn't matter what you do, how you do it, they are going to get their feelings hurt. They are going to be offended. Why is that? Because they have a preoccupation with self. They can deny it all they want to. They are filled with pride. Pride is the service of self. The service of self. The service of self will keep you out of Romans 12, 1 and 2. It is the feeling or manifestation of self-importance, self-centeredness, self-admiration, self-will, self-righteousness, self-gratification. The elevation of self in one's mind is in direct opposition to everything that is stated in Romans 12, 1 and 2. So be sure of this, pride will not allow you to live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. Then there's that second statement. Think soberly according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. The key word there is faith. And it is the antithesis of faith that will keep you out of Romans 12, 1 and 2. The antithesis of faith is to walk by sight. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7, Paul said, "We walk by faith, not by sight." So the antithesis of faith is to walk by sight. So you have a contrast between faith and sight. To walk by sight is to walk as the world walks. To walk by sight is to judge matters the same way the world judges matters. It is to judge by way of the carnal. But to walk by sight is even more than that. It is to be governed and shaped by what we see with the physical eye. If we are governed and shaped, if our lives are molded by what we see with the physical eye, we walk by sight. That's not walking by faith. It's not that faith ignores what's all around us, but faith has the ability to look beyond what is around us. Sight does not have that ability. Sight is stuck in the here and now. That's where it's stuck. So, walking by sight will not allow us to live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. So there's two things that prevent us from living in Romans 12, 1 and 2. Pride and walking by sight. That brings us to our third point. Two things absolutely necessary to living the life of Romans 12, 1 and 2. Again, in that first statement, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. That's the mindset again and the preoccupation with self. The feeling of self-importance, self-will, self-righteousness, self-gratification. All that is being warned against. And the antithesis of that is humility. The antithesis of the first statement, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, is humility. And humility is an absolute necessity to living in Romans 12, 1 and 2. So what is humility? Well, humility is an inward sense of unworthiness before God. First, but also an inward sense of unworthiness before others. Others are more worthy than ourselves. It is a profound self-abasement before God. It goes against almost everything that we are taught in this life. It is a spirit of submission. Again, we are taught. I'm not saying that our parents sat down and purposely taught us to be prideful. I'm not saying that. But we have been taught all our lives to have pride. Our parents taught us that. Teachers taught us that. Society teaches us that. We taught our own children that. It's everywhere. And that's why people today don't even know what humility is. And there's a false sense of humility. But humility shows itself in a spirit of submission. If we have a difficulty submitting to God, it's because we have a problem with pride. I mean, how proud does a person have to be to refuse to submit to God? You're saying, I know more than God. That's pretty prideful. It shows itself in an absolute dependence upon God. But humility also is an attitude of contentment before God. Whatever God chooses our lot in life to be, humility says, I'm content with that. I'm content with that. Humility, just like pride, is described in a variety of ways throughout the Scriptures. In Psalm 34:18 and Psalm 51:17, we read of a broken heart and a contrite spirit. That describes humility. That which is broken is disabled. It doesn't work. A broken heart. Humility means that we are disabled as to our own ways. We want to be disabled as to our own ways. Why? Because our ways are not God's ways. And God's ways are not our ways. It speaks of a contrite spirit. That is a penitent spirit. A spirit that is willing to take its place before God. A spirit that is always ready to repent and not defend its wrong. Humility is, as Luke 14:10 states, to be ready in all places, on all occasions, to take the lowest place. He teaches against taking the chief seat. But to seek out the lowest place. That's humility. But you see, everybody thinks they deserve the best seat. That's pride. Why do you deserve the better seat over someone else? It is, humility is what we see in Galatians 2, verse 20. Not I, but Christ. Not I. Not I, not I. That goes against, again, everything we're taught. Not I. We live in a me, me, me society. Humility says, not I, or not me, not me, not me, but Christ. So this humility is an absolute necessity to living in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. And that's why we need to pray that the Lord break our pride and give us humility. It needs to be a prayer. And He can do it. And He will do it. And that enables us to live in Romans 12, 1 and 2, which is an abundant life. Again, there's that second statement. To think soberly according as God hath dealt to every man the measure or the quantity or the stature of faith. That statement teaches us that there are degrees of faith, the measure of faith. But faith is a requirement. Walking by sight will keep you out of Romans 12, 1 and 2. Faith is a requirement to live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. Faith looks away from self. Faith looks away from the temporal. Faith looks away from self to God. From the temporal to the spiritual. And it is vitally necessary or vitally essential to living in Romans 12, 1 and 2. And living life in Romans 12, 1 and 2 is essential to our measure or extent of faith. So what is faith? Well, faith is dependence and reliance upon God rather than self. If you depend and rely upon self, you will not submit yourselves. You will not present your bodies a living sacrifice unto God. Faith depends and relies upon God rather than self. Faith is an unreserved trust and confidence in God rather than self. To think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think, we put all of our trust and confidence in self. Faith is leaning upon God rather than leaning upon self. Faith is resting upon God rather than resting upon our own laurels. Faith is cleaving to God rather than cleaving to ourselves. It's looking to God rather than looking to ourself. It's coming to God. It's fleeing to God. It's casting ourself upon God. It's living in the reality of God. It's letting go. Present your bodies a living sacrifice. That is, let go. That requires faith. It requires faith to let go. Faith is seeing God. Faith is embracing the things of God rather than embracing self. Faith is believing. Faith is acting upon what we believe. See, people say, I have faith, I believe. Well, faith without works is dead. Faith is not only believing, faith is acting upon what we believe. And it requires faith to live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. It is believing and acting upon who God is, believing and acting upon the omnipotence of God, the omnipresence of God, the omniscience of God, the sovereignty of God. We believe those things, but faith is more than belief. Faith is acting upon those things. And to the extent that we do all of these things tells us the extent or the measure of our faith. To the extent that we live in Romans 12, 1 and 2 tells us the measure of our faith. So you see, this faith makes the spiritual material. It makes the spiritual to us to be material. It gives it reality. It causes the spiritual to have meaning. People can read the scriptures, they get no meaning out of it whatsoever because it requires faith. Faith gives meaning. Faith gives significance to the things of God. Faith, you can be sound in theology and not have faith. Theology is simply spiritual facts, spiritual truths. But faith does not just look upon the spiritual as facts. Faith looks upon it as reality. That is, spiritual facts, spiritual doctrine becomes lively and real to the individual. That's faith. Faith enables an individual to stand upon the spiritual, to lay hold of the spiritual, because it's real. And what we read here in Romans 12, 1 and 2 is foundational to serving God. You and I will not serve God if we do not obey Romans 12, 1 and 2. And absolutely essential to that is faith. We have to have faith to enter Romans 12, 1 and 2. It takes faith to present your body a living sacrifice to God. It takes faith not to be conformed to the world. The world is what you can see. It takes faith not to be conformed to that, that which is right in front of you every day. It takes faith. It takes faith to be transformed. All of this requires faith. So our degree of dedication, our degree of surrender, our degree of nonconformity, our degree of transforming is in harmony with faith. They go together. The quality of our spiritual life, our degree of living for the Lord, our following the Lord, our prayer life, our love for the Lord, our enjoyment of the Lord, the peace, the assurance, all of this is related to faith. It's all connected to faith. So faith is absolutely essential to living in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, we ought to join with the apostles, Lord, increase our faith. Many reasons to pray that, but one of the reasons is that we can live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. Present your bodies a living sacrifice unto God. I'm going to start trying to do that. Don't waste your time if you don't have faith. It requires faith. You have to have faith. Just mere determination and resolve will not get it done. There has to be faith. So in conclusion, we see in our text, verse 3, there are two statements representing two entirely different perspectives, self and God. Representing two entirely different objects, two entirely different attitudes, two entirely different realms concerning living life, self and God. We see that again, that word think, two times. In both statements, we see them. So we have in these two statements two thought processes, self and God. In the first statement, not to think more highly than we ought to think of ourselves, the focus is upon self. In the second statement, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith, the focus is upon God. Between those two statements, you find the conjunction but. That's the dividing line between the two statements. So it indicates a contrast. But to think soberly. To think soberly. Think of sober as the opposite of intoxication. But to think soberly. To think highly of self is irrational thinking. Not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think, but to think soberly. So in other words, if we think highly of ourselves, we're thinking irrationally. It's delusional. Person who is intoxicated is delusional. But we're to turn from self to God. And to do that means that we think soberly. Anytime we turn from God to self, we're like an intoxicated individual. We're delusional. When we turn from self to God, that is thinking soberly. To think soberly is to think clearly. So if we think, if our focus is upon self, we do not think clearly. It is to think in an unclouded way. So the implication here is this, that a proud state of mind is not clear thinking. It is not sensible thinking. It is not rational thinking. And it is utter nonsense. That's pride. Any kind of thinking that prevents you and I from living in Romans 12, 1 and 2 is delusional. Any type of thinking that prevents us from living in Romans 12, 1 and 2 is not sober thinking. It's not thinking clearly. But rather, it's a state of intoxication. Intoxicated with what? Self. There are a lot of people who are intoxicated with self. They're intoxicated with the temporal. And again, an intoxicated person does not think soberly. And to be intoxicated is extremely dangerous to yourself and to others. And for an individual not to think soberly, which is God, turning away from self to God. If we do not think that way, we think like an intoxicated person. And we become a danger to ourselves because we're going to do stupid things. We're going to make bad decisions. You see it all the time. You see it even in God's people. They make the same bad decisions over and over and over and over again. And it's not a matter of IQ. It is a matter of spirituality. It is a matter of pride and humility. It is a matter of self and God. And you say to yourself, I say to myself, you would think somewhere along the line that a light bulb would go on. This isn't working. But that doesn't happen. Because once again, it's not a matter of IQ. It's a matter of spirituality. So they do the same things over and over and over and over again. They're a danger to themselves. They're a danger to their family. They're a danger to their children. They're a danger to those who are around them. This is a very serious matter. Now notice, to think soberly is in accord with faith. To think soberly, according, in accord with, as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. To think soberly is necessary to living life in Romans 12, 1 and 2. To think soberly is to live by faith. To think in an intoxicated way is to walk by sight. Any other kind of thinking other than sober thinking is delusional. It's delusional. And that's why people make bad decisions all the time. Because they weigh out all the temporal things. Where's the spiritual? Where's faith? That outweighs all the temporal, by the way. But they weigh out all the temporal things. What are they doing? They're walking by sight. They're delusional in their thinking. They're going to make the wrong decision. But God is merciful, and He has ways of saving people from their own stupidity. He's done that with all of us. But we need to understand the importance of thinking soberly, of thinking by walking by faith. And as we think soberly, as we live by faith, that fills us with a desire to live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. It gives us that desire. So, oh, what a life is ours to live. You can read Romans 12, 1 and 2 to yourselves. We're not going to take the time. We've read it several times. But what a life. What a way to live. And in order to live that life, self and God must be in proper perspective. Have to have those two entities in their proper place. And we all know we get those things out of place in our lives. God help us not to make major decisions when we get those two out of place. I certainly, there's a lot, well, I need to quit, but we need to think soberly. God, increase our faith so that we can live in Romans 12, 1 and 2. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us.